Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled Keys to a Successful Services Engagement. I'm Kurt Schwader, technical editor at Open Systems Media, and today's moderator with our speaker, Don Harbin from MontaVista Software. Today's total briefing is scheduled for about 50 minutes, leaving a 10-minute Q&A period at the end. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some features of your audience console. The first is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fit your entire screen. Clicking the Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box and associated Submit Question button allows you to participate in today's eCast. You simply type your question into the text box and submit it by checking on the button. You can submit questions at any time, and we encourage you to do so while the questions are fresh in your mind. We'll be doing our best to address them during the closing Q&A. If you have a question or problem pertaining to the eCast operation itself, submit it, and one of our technicians will respond to you during the eCast. Finally, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours, and an audio podcast will also be made available. We'll talk about this in a little more detail on the end. The worldwide economy is gaining steam after its largest downturn in history. As we continue the economic momentum, industries across the board are working hard to make up for lost time. This puts additional time-to-market demands on embedded development teams. And to further complicate things, new and emerging technologies like multi-core processor architectures, programming languages, operating systems, and development tools are needed to advance product line performance and capabilities, which adds learning curve to the development timeline. Many companies find themselves short-staffed. Now, you might be setting a long-term goal of staffing up, but this takes time to find the right people with the right skill set. Often short-term plans are needed so that you don't miss out on new opportunities on the horizon. Contracting for professional services can be a great interim solution during these times of opportunity. It can also be a great way to inject immediate technology expertise into your organization. But throwing money at a consulting organization without planning and clear understanding of the objectives can be a recipe for disaster. Today we'll be hearing from Don Harbin about planning for a successful services engagement. Don is the Director of Professional Services at MontaVista and has 25 years of experience in the industry. Don has a diverse background in software, hardware, and test development. A large portion of this expertise has been in leadership roles with professional services organizations ranging from commercial to military solutions. He's been on both sides of many services engagements, and we're very lucky to have him here today to share his insights. Don?
Thanks, Kurt. I appreciate you all taking out your time to come and join us today. As Kurt said, I've been asked to briefly give a high-level overview of keys to successful services engagements, and I think it's pretty obvious that that's going to be from an embedded Linux perspective. So the topics I've chosen to focus on for this webinar in the agenda here include the following. First, I'll have an overview of professional services in general, focusing in the area of embedded Linux. We'll talk about some common problems encountered in the embedded Linux area, how people can leverage or companies can leverage the open source community in creating custom solutions. That'll include a little bit about knowing the community, working in the community, and leveraging the community. I'll briefly touch on protecting development software assets and a little bit of understanding the GPL licensing. And then I'll close discussing some of the services that MontaVista provides in these areas. So to start with, embedded Linux professional services. General definition of professional services, I've put down here, department of a software supplier that provides consultancy, resourcing, and expertise within a software domain. In particular, this one will be Linux. But that can include areas such as software architecture, software design, programming, integration, validation and test, quality, others that aren't listed, such as support, and or some combination of those. Additionally, when we're talking embedded Linux, two more come into play, which is around the licensing and legal issues that can pertain to Linux, and then also Linux community navigation, understanding all the projects that are out there. Linux is always moving, so there's different versions, and how to choose mature projects, how to choose mature versions, and those kind of items. So some of the common problems encountered that we see historically, I'll just go over those briefly, and starting engagements late is the first one I have. We'll run into customers who have tried things on their own and had struggled or not making the progress they needed to make in time, or they've run out of time. So that's one of the challenges we run into often with customers. The sooner a customer can make a decision to go with a services company and get them engaged, the better off the overall project can benefit from that. Waiting too long can create difficult scenarios where certain elements of a project can be sacrificed, and typically the kind of things we see that get sacrificed are upfront planning and requirements that end up impacting the projects later on, or sacrifices in quality. Of course, there'll be cases where features have to be reduced and those kind of things. So it's always good to make those decisions if one chooses to go that direction as soon as possible. Find a professional services partner and get them involved as soon as possible. The next one that can happen is what I call farming out one's intellectual property. So, of course, a company has their own IP, their own family jewels that they want to hold on to, and we always encourage that portion of the development to be what a company would focus on and keep within their domain, and then a professional services company can come in and do some of the other tasks that might be easier for them to be able to support and allow the company to focus on their IP. A common one in the, particularly in the Linux environment, is what we've coined as chasing the kernel. Where that's coming from is the kernel, the Linux kernel is always moving on a pretty fast beat rate. There's always new features being added, and it can be really enticing to want to develop a product and then to want to always try to keep up with that. And so you start a project, and 8 weeks later, a new kernel comes out with a really neat feature or something that seems like it could be useful in the future. And we will often discourage against that. We instead choose to kind of encourage our customers anyway to stabilize that foundation. The kernel ends up being the foundation for all the customer applications. So we really encourage just to, at the right time in a plan, to pick the correct version of the Linux kernel that's available, select it, stop on that one, and for the remainder of that project, stabilize on that, and to make sure that we're getting everything working very solid for a successful product. Next common problem might be called not embracing the community. So a lot of companies have internal processes, standards, operating procedures, internal ways they do things, everything from how they do code control, how they do peer reviews, all the details of a typical software development process. And the Linux community has its own, and it can waste many cycles if a company attempts to try to move the Linux process and somehow get it to work on their internal process. We've found companies being very successful when they take a component of their development organization and get them working in beat rate and have the freedom to work in the community, work under the community processes and standards. And this allows them to be more efficient and to understand the code better, and just the leverage they get from that can really help. This also allows them to push fixes into the community, get fixes from the community, or defects, or feature enhancements. Just found overall that that can be a really helpful model to consider. I'm also sensitive that that can be very difficult for some larger companies, but anything one can do to move an organization towards that, we've found that makes them more successful. A couple more common problems that can be encountered. Jumping too quickly into development, this might not just be for a professional services engagement, but in general. And again, pushed if the relationship, as we were talking about earlier, gets started too late. But taking the time to understand the development solutions up front, taking the time to create a strong architecture, develop your requirements up front, and making sure that everybody is on the same page. And part of that process in the embedded Linux community is considering what's available in the community. There's lots of existing projects and code out there that can be leveraged, lots of solutions. So part of that process then in an embedded Linux environment includes taking the time to architect solutions that leverage those available components. Another important element can be finding the right blend of offshore, onshore mix with your resourcing. So, of course, leaning one way can be very cost efficient and leaning, but it's at the sacrifice of things like on-site support, direct customer interfacing, and sometimes that can be a large disadvantage and cause issues down the road, whereas having an entirely onshore team, for example, can then not provide some of the advantages that, from a cost perspective. So finding that correct blend can also help to make an engagement very successful. Next, I'll talk a little bit about just knowing the community. So the next three slides are kind of in summary. They're a little bit dated, so the data may not be 100% accurate, but I think it gives the message. They're also very busy slides. That's because the Linux community is a very busy place. So lots of words on this slide, but I think the messaging is pretty strong. This slide is just focusing on the Linux kernel and the Linux kernel community. As you can see in the summary, it's approximately 11 million lines of code or more now, and it's updated every 10 weeks by upwards of 1,200 engineers or more contributing to that. And another important point is that 5% of that is really aligned to the embedded community. And on top of that is hundreds of other projects, which I'll reflect in the next slide, influencing this. So all those variables make it extremely difficult to get a really solid grip on and understand the availability and where things are, unless you are living out in that community. So on that note, then you see on this slide, the kernel is now a smaller block within the center of the slide, another very busy slide. But we can see then that all the other components of Linux now come involved, the utilities such as grep and diff, additional libraries such as SQLite, projects outside of the Linux kernel that one wants to leverage, such as Apache and Bonnie, Samba, all those things add up to an additional very large amount of code, and understanding all of those projects that are out there at varying levels of maturity and varying availability and new ones coming in all the time can be a daunting task for one to take on. But very important to understand, again, up front when one is architecting a solution so that wise decisions can be made. Then we take that kernel with all the utilities and projects and support that are around that, and now we have to move those into a specific embedded environment. That ends up being the final step. And taking the appropriate portions of the kernel that are required, modifying them for that target, combining that with the particular and selected utilities and libraries that are required, because one project simply won't require all of this, but there's a specific solution, so you need to know and architect how to pull in the right pieces and get them all to work. And now they have to be working on and validated and integrated into a particular embedded platform, whether it's an ARM core, MIPS, PowerPC, or other solution. And then those, in that case, are using an associated compiler tool / tool chain for that particular environment. So as we can see, and then we have to take that and then focus on making sure the performance is there, that it's supportable, that the stability is reached. So taking all those pieces and putting them in there, it can be what is challenging in understanding and knowing how to use and leverage the community for an embedded solution such as this. So a little more on knowing the community. Just to reiterate some of the things we've been talking about, working in the community does include leveraging their coding standards. Different projects can have in particular coding standards, and it definitely is to a developer's advantage to align with those. And then how to successfully communicate or contribute back to those projects and work out in the community can, it's not an overnight process for a developer to learn how to do that. And at times companies like MonaVista can help one learn how to work within that community as well. But it can be a tough task to learn to work successfully out there in the community. It's a different environment than one would might be used to that's been doing internal project software development where you're in an enclosed environment. Things are pretty open out there, and different ideas are tossed back and forth, and a developer might have to have some thick skin because what they think might be a good idea will get rejected. But I think this is what makes Linux so compelling as well, because it evolves the solutions into the best overall solution. And there are a lot of brilliant minds out there developing and improving the code and the quality of the code daily. That's why leveraging the community can be so valuable. And understanding where it's at, what's out there, and how you can get the most out of it. So we've talked about those things. Now we'll go into just a brief overview of protecting one's assets and understanding the GPL. So this is very high level. I'll start with a disclaimer. I'm not a lawyer. I'm an engineer. And one thing I've observed, being in the Linux development, there's a lot of us engineers out here, and every one of us thinks we understand the GPL and kind of become our own self-appointed lawyers. There's a certain religious debate around this and possible solutions, but I do think there are some general guidelines that can be followed, and disciplines that can be followed to help a project be successful in the Linux development in protecting their intellectual property. One thing that's always good for a company to do is to have a very strong, what I'll call, certificate of origin process to assure that they understand where all of their software has come from, not just the GPL, but all other code as well, and understand where it's all from and understand the licensing behind it all and make very intentional and conscientious decisions about how to handle each of those cases. And last on this slide, I'll just say that it does become a company personal decision, and a legal position has to be taken by each company, and each company ends up with a unique position. So some typical best practices. For the kernel, when we're adding components into there, it's very common to use dynamically loaded kernel modules. That's just a common practice that is considered to protect one's IP when it's down in the kernel. In the application space, a company's always safe if they create their own code. The second bullet there under applications, I think I poorly wrote. Basically, it's saying be careful when you copy and paste software, or be very conscientious of that, because copy and pasting can lead to issues if someone goes and just does a copy and paste from GPL code into their proprietary solutions. That can lead to issues. And then interfacing with the Linux kernel through the publicly exported APIs is also a good standard to follow. A little more on kernel modules and derivative works. Derivative works is one of the religious debates that people can get into. This slide is just kind of giving an overview that there are companies that side on both sides of that. There's arguments for and arguments against what is a derived work. One argument for saying that kernel modules are a derived work is, you know, saying it's a distinction without a difference. Against derived works, which it can just say that it's a user space program communicating with the kernel via standard system calls. So this seems to be a best practice, but once again, I can't reiterate enough that a company has to come to their own conclusions. MontaVista, on occasions, will provide direction on that. However, it has to be a company's final decision to own that. So, you know, each company does have to come up with their own legal position on these and many other cases. So it's just important to consider applications, kernel drivers, plugins, libraries, pipes, sockets, define what the company decides is and is not a derivative work. And then even down to each company decides how they're going to publish GPL-developed code. Some companies, as we know, GPL is, if asked for, has to be published. Some companies choose to, when they release a product, just automatically publish that code immediately on a FTP server somewhere or something so that they don't have to worry about it. Others choose to take a position that when it's a, com- another company requests that code, that they provide it to them. Again, it just becomes a company decision on how to handle that. So we've talked a little bit about professional services and embedded Linux in general. Now I'll just spend a few more slides on the MontaVista professional services and the advantages that we provide. So MontaVista Services Solutions has a lot of flexibility. We leverage our own products for one thing. MontaVista has MontaVista Linux 6 and DevRocket development tools. We also provide other tools that we will leverage in our professional services engagements. But there are times when we don't use those, depending on the type of engagement it is. We also have some very advanced validation and test facilities that can either be part of the engagement, or at times that we provide entire engagements where a company might come in just for validation and test purposes to get the confidence and leverage the many years of experience and the test bench that we've built up over the years to find out the stability of their development environment. We also, of course, leverage our understanding of the community. And as we saw earlier, there's a lot of projects out there. There's a lot of code out there. Our developers keep tabs on what tools are available that can help and keep an idea of what open source components are available and useful, have an idea of their stability, their maturity. Projects out there are at different maturity levels and stability levels, and we do our best to stay on top of that to help our customers. From a MontaVista maturity perspective, we have been in business for over 10 years, very experienced staff with diverse solutions over the multiple embedded technologies, including multi-core MIPS, PowerPC, ARM, also with varying solutions, starting from the kernel and the drivers all the way up through applications and high reliability solutions. And spanning various industries on top of that, telecommunications, mobile, automotive, Android, medical, and others. So our solutions flexibility, another area that we have some flexibility is our staff. We do provide a diverse staff across multiple time zones, multiple skill sets, and provide support worldwide, which can be very advantageous depending on one's location, as well as providing competitive rates and creating good blended rates. Multiple development centers help us to stay closer to the time zone that the customer may be in, so this can be an advantage as well. So another thing I did kind of emphasize, but we are complementary to the MontaVista products. And even though we can use those and even enhance some of the MontaVista tools if that's what's required, we can be independent. Clearly, our focus is embedded Linux. That's what we do. And that can include either new code development or leveraging community code. It can include helping with proprietary solutions or leveraging pure open source solutions over all the technologies, processor technologies, and many software variants or versions, and so providing support to all those is some of the advantages we bring. Even from a contractual perspective, we provide a lot of flexibility there as well. And it can be from a very small, like a one developer kind of product or development effort, all the way to large scale. Time and material, fixed price, you know, we kind of cover all of that. And again, just to finally to reiterate, any combination of these services can be provided for all phases of the life of the software development life cycle, starting with the architecture and requirements definition. And as I discussed, that can be involved in solutions we're using from the community and getting that built into the architecture. The software design, implementation, software integration, validation and test services, productization, everything from increasing the quality from concept to release, quality throughout all phases of the development, provide tool chain support, also can provide other custom services such as tuning of performance, code optimizations, real-time support when it's needed. And then other items such as post-production support can be provided as well, all the way from phone to on-site to dedicated support. We've also are very involved in some of, you know, just open source project developments and leveraging those, such as Android, and we do a lot of work around networking solutions. Typically, our legal advice is generally just something we provide along with a project we do, but clearly that's an advantage, having that expertise in-house when we're working with us. And then, of course, any project requires skilled project planning and oversight, and Monta Vista has some very strong leaders in that area as well to help with cost and schedule containment, staying on schedule, getting the features in as needed. And finally, we have some training as well that we provide. That's pretty much it. The final slide I have is just talking about a couple upcoming Monta Vista webinars. June 21st, QA Process and Systems. Will be presented by Joe Pearson, and then Standards in the Automotive Infotainment Market will be presented by Dan Cauchy on July 21st.
Very good. It's time for the Q&A portion of our e-webcast. Please feel free to ask your questions now, audience. Let's start with, I guess we got a nuts and bolts question here. Do you have any tips or references for someone wanting to engage in a service contract in terms of templates or what should be included in the content of a contract to get what you're after for a successful engagement? Does Monta Vista have some of these things? Should they draw them up? How does that work?
We typically start with templates. We have a number of templates we use for that that have a lot of the things for an embedded engagement that you would need to make sure that we're covered. Things such as making sure that enough hardware is going to be available, you know, in the embedded environment, available hardware becomes very important.
Right.
So making sure that we understand how many roles, hardware roles, that is, are going to be made, and making sure that we take into consideration all of those components and help the customers plan for that.
Right. That's probably something a lot of people forget, is they're thinking in terms of the deliverables from the services organization to them and not the deliverables they need to be able to make to the services organization to make sure everything gets done on time.
Yeah.
Here's a question about pushing code to the community. Can anyone do that? Is there a procedure to it? How does that work?
Yeah, there's definitely a procedure to it. I guess you could say anyone can do it, and the procedure is one that someone has to live, I think, and Montavistic has helped companies learn how to work successfully in the community as well, if that's what a company is interested in doing. It's more of an art than a procedure to be able to successfully work in the community, because there are a lot of even unwritten processes that need to be adhered to if you want to be successful.
Right. You did mention something about learning how to work within the community during your presentation. Do you provide a service for that? Is that typically just kind of an aside to the overall engagement itself? How can you get somebody ramped up on something like that?
Yeah, so we don't have what you would call a particular service we provide. However, we do, if that's what a customer is desiring to do, is to learn to do these things on their own. We have provided, when we create a relationship, if that's something that's known up front, we definitely help our developers work directly with the developers of a company, and have even gone as far as having other companies sit within our environment and to be able to learn to do those kind of this kind of art form.
Okay, and I guess that also leads into you mentioned this embracing the community thing. Does that feed into that? So, are you saying that organizations should kind of have engineers within their development that have like a foot in the community and a foot in what they're trying to do with the community?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Again, embracing the community can mean a lot of things. It can mean successfully knowing what's out there and the maturity of what you're working with, but it can also, again, kind of tie to an organization from a process perspective and tools and just overall standard operating procedures, be able to work closer to how the community works, because it is what the community has is very successful, and it's not going to change in any dramatic way.
Right. Okay. Here's a question about if using services for a specific expertise, so I guess this is more of a knowledge transfer question, how do they set up the services engagement to make sure that the knowledge is indeed being transferred? Are there things that you can put in the contract or milestones that might you be able to include to make sure that transfer is happening? I guess they're saying they don't want the services contract to be done and then having no one in their organization that has been up the learning curve.
Yeah, and that can happen several ways. Again, it can happen by having several of their developers working side by side with ours. It can happen through deliverables such as very clear design documentation, making sure that all the documentation is in place for how things are built, how to leverage the community. Those are the kind of things we would work. Typically, I don't see those as a contractual item, but more of just a discussion point and,
right,
you know, just a clear understanding, but we clearly do that on occasions.
Right. Have you done things like code walkthroughs, for example, where you're walking through code that you might have designed and developed, and I guess that could help greatly with the knowledge transfer?
Absolutely. Yes. We've provided those kind of inputs and our feedback to these customers is a good first step. For one thing, it's a little kinder than they might get if they try to push it straight to the community initially. So it can be a good first step to kind of get a feel for what the community expects from that perspective, and then have your developers move out into the community.
Okay. Here's a a Linux question. Is the MonaVista kernel the same as that in Android? Are there some differences between them? How do you deal with, and maybe an extension to that, how do you deal with services for Linux-based things that may not be MonaVista or might need to lie on top of Android? You mentioned that that was a bullet in one of your services slides, I believe.
Yeah, so we can put Android on top of various kernels depending on the customer's need.
And so in terms of the kernel, Android, I guess, does not use a kernel. It's just designed to be put on top of a Linux kernel.
It can. It definitely uses the kernel, but it can. We can make it work on top of various versions.
Okay, and I guess the MonaVista kernel is one that it works on today, or is there customization that needs to happen?
Right, and so when you say the MonaVista kernel, again, as a Linux company, it's becomes a little more complicated than that because we support it's. The Linux kernel, and there's many, many, many versions of it. And so when we would help a company get a product developed, it becomes a specific version of a specific kernel that's been customized for their development effort, and it becomes that company's kernel.
Ah, okay. I see. You also mentioned don't chase the kernel. How often should you check? Is this something that you create a stable product on a version you pick, and then maybe as you're creating updates to that product, is that a good time to see about if you should include updating the kernel?
Well, we typically encourage a company during their planning phase. In a typical development, you're going through architecture and design and requirements, and you're putting your project together, there is a point in time where you need to begin implementation. It could either happen implementation of the final version, if you will. It could happen very early in a project, depending on the magnitude, or it could happen a little later. But during the project management and the planning phase, we would always encourage that a company pick a point in time where it is the time where they have to select which version they're going to use for that particular product or project, I should say.
Okay.
And then take that project to completion. And if there's a follow-on project that's either leveraging a lot of that technology, which is often the case, or a new product that would leverage a bunch of that technology as well, it would be a good time then to evaluate if you need to move to a new kernel. We have customers that are still successful, have modern products that are still successfully using kernels that are, 5 years old or older. So depending, it's a case by case, and then some other customers need the extremely latest technology available in some of the later kernels. So it becomes a case by case.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'm. Maybe I should be sad to admit this, but our company does update our kernel occasionally, and we're not particularly sure what we're updating to or what the new capabilities are when we're updating. Is that something that MonaVista can help with as you're trying to decide whether you should update? Some people just figure that they need to update because, well, there's something newer up there, and maybe it will fix something that they haven't run across, but there's a bug in there.
Yeah, and so that would be a case where if you're updating just to update and you really don't know why, that's probably not a good reason, in my opinion anyway, to just go update for the sake of updating, because what you're sacrificing is any of the stability that you've gained over the past 1 or 2 years or 6 months or whatever the window is that you've been working on your existing operating system.
Right. So do you just wade through release notes to do that, or is that something MonaVista can help identify and understand what the implications are, or what's the best approach to?
Yeah, that's where we would work together with the customers. Okay. And Yeah. Again, it becomes a case by case, but there's definitely good reasons to move forward. But without a good reason, you really need to carefully evaluate it.
Right. Here's a person who has several programs that run open source processes, and they redirect and parse the output of those open source programs. Is that within the spirit of the GPL? And I know that's a high-level description of what they're doing, but...
I don't know what's meant by redirect those processes, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if maybe they're just using pipes or domain sockets or something to communicate. I mean, if you're creating an application that then takes input and sends output someplace else, is that kind of the good logical dividing point to figure out whether that particular process or entity is GPL, or is there another thing you should consider when trying to understand what's covered under GPL and what's not?
Yeah, and so without really understanding what we're talking about here and the sensitivity of GPL and those kind of how that impacts everything, it's hard for me to answer that kind
right.
of question. I'm scared to answer it.
Okay. How about, here's another question on the process itself. Do you have any suggestions on proper planning and setup of a services engagement where the consultants will be participating in the design work? Like, would Monta Vista typically use their own design templates? Would they use the company's? What kinds of tasks and milestones might be included to be able to track the design phase for the services engagement?
Yeah, so we clearly have our own design templates and can provide that guidance if it's needed, but we'll often use a customer's formats as well because, again, this is where it crosses over to where some companies have their mandatory processes and procedures, standard operating procedures they have to follow. So we can... kind of cross that line, and then as far as the types of deliverables, that can be up for discussion as well. For example, if you're creating new code, you might have more in the area of architecture and design documents, and detailed design documents, where if you're reusing community code and just modifying it, it can impact what your final document and document trail and all the documentation you need looks like.
Right, right. Okay, yeah, certainly if you're just modifying something, you probably don't need to go through an entire design phase to describe that.
Right, it can be very difficult. We typically don't want to get into where we're attempting to create documentation of documenting the code, the Linux code that's already out there. As we just talked about, they have their own methods and ways of documenting things, and going out there and attempting to create custom documentation for tens of millions of lines of code that are changing dynamically anyway isn't something we recommend.
Right, right. You mentioned that you do have a lot of legal experience with Linux. Have companies come to you just for legal counsel? In terms of looking at their code?
That's typically we do have a strong legal team, and that's typically a complementary component of the development. During negotiations, during discussions, we often pull in our lawyers to help with some of the questions or some of the details that might be requested in that area.
Okay. The certificate of origin stuff that you talked about, that kind of was on the legal side. Is that a process that the company itself would make up? Do you have suggestions on how to do this certificate of origin process, or could potentially even set something like that up for a company, or how might that work?
Yeah, so that's typically a custom per company and something that they would typically have, I hope, in their own standard operating procedures. We can surely give ideas on that, but really what it is just a way to make sure that the software developers are conscientious and aware of the implications and knowing where all their code comes from. So there can be multiple tools or multiple ways for a software developer and to go through that process, and it's more of a discipline that has to be integrated into a company.
Okay. In terms of the kernel.org slide, it mentioned processors across the bottom. You talked about some, you know, the different processor architectures require some different builds and stuff. I assume if we were to extend that into, you know, drivers, different I/O chips, and even embedded platforms, how does an engagement with MontaVista work in terms of, you know, supporting a given platform that might either be off the shelf or might be a custom design by a company?
Right. So, again, depending on the processor, the community has lots of drivers as well, as we know. So, for example, if someone is providing a hardware platform to us with a certain bridge chip on it that's external to the processor, we would, wherever we can, start with community code and, you know, then port that over to make it work in that particular environment.
Okay. And if they have their own custom platform and want you to kind of go through the validation process, there's you would lever as much of the chips as off-the-shelf drivers. If there are FPGAs, ASICs involved, those kinds of things that require drivers, that's just something you can write for them extra and ends up being part of their Linux board support pack, RPM or something?
Right, and what we often find is that in most cases, companies that have developed custom boards with that kind of technology on it have already written some of their own software to validate or make sure that the technology or the board is working correctly. So it can obviously be an advantage if we have that as a starting point. And so then we can basically commercialize something that they've done just to validate their technology. We can take their code as a starting point to save a lot of time and energy and make it a more profitable solution.
Have you ever been asked by silicon companies to take a piece of silicon and write a Linux driver for it, ring it out, that kind of thing? Is that a typical thing that MontaVista would do, or do silicon companies usually kind of do that themselves?
Well, that's kind of a historical question. I think we've historically done a lot more of that, but more and more as Linux has taken front and center, the silicon companies are seeing the need to do that themselves very early on and integrating Linux into their test benches and everything. So you'll see a lot of them providing a lot of that technology.
I see. You mentioned the importance of latching on to a kernel. Here's a question asking if you've got examples of customers that are successful when remaining on an older kernel, and when a problem comes up, how do they deal with it in terms of if they are on an older kernel?
Right. So, again, we have cases where we're still supporting customers. We do have long-term support for certain solutions, but on 2.4 kinds of kernels. And you know, when problems do come up, we typically work directly with those companies and help them to integrate the fixes and the solutions in. So as you can imagine, the leading edge of the community is typically where a lot of people focus, but there are times when we can find fixes in the community as well. But in when you get to the older kernels, it just comes down to still having that understanding and expertise to be able to leverage.
Okay. Where do you view the consulting sweet spot for MontaVista in particular? Do you shine in the design phase of designing something that's going to run on top of a Linux environment? Is it the coding and implementation? Is it the test and validation?
That's a tough question. I think we provide services across all of those.
Okay.
And so really I think where we shine is in the embedded Linux space.
I see. So you kind of have enough, you have a range of expertise and labor grades that make it just as efficient to ask MontaVista to write a driver than it does to help you in the whole software architecture design of a Linux system somebody's putting together.
Correct.
Okay. Well, very good. We've got a clarification on that previous GPL, but unfortunately we have run out of time, so maybe that person can contact you directly about that.
Yeah.
I appreciate all of you for attending today's eCast, and thank you very much, Don, for taking the time to be with us and share some important insights on keys to a successful services engagement. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. I'd like to thank you all for attending, and have a great day.